A mental health researcher from Melbourne University's School of Population and Global Health is calling on the government to shift its mental health spending to focus far more on prevention strategies. Professor Anthony Jorm warns that despite an increase in mental health services in the last two decades, the mental health of the population has not improved. And he says Australians have the second highest use of antidepressants in the OECD after Iceland. Professor Jorm has just published a paper on the issue in the Australian and New Zealand Journal of Psychiatry. He joined me from Melbourne earlier. Professor Jorm, you say that the mental health of the Australian population has not improved over the last two decades, despite massive increases in government spending. What's your evidence for that?
Well, there have been a number of population surveys of the mental health of Australians, and we've also had a state survey of the population of one state, and none of the surveys show any improvement. If anything, there's a trend in some subgroups of the population for things maybe to get slightly worse, but certainly no evidence of any improvement.
According to official health statistics, the federal government has more than tripled its spending on mental health over the last two decades. It seems surprising and concerning that this is not having an effect. Is that money being wasted?
I wouldn't say it's being wasted, but I think what we've done is we've put all our eggs in one basket, that if you want to reduce the level of mental health problems in the population, you basically have two strategies. One is if people develop a problem, you try and get them better quickly through treatment and services, and that's where we've put our resources. The other one is you try and stop them getting those problems in the first place, which is prevention. And we've done virtually nothing in that approach. What we have seen that is very positive is there's been a consistent reduction in the suicide rate in Australia since the late 1990s. And it's interesting that that corresponded with the introduction of a national suicide prevention strategy. So it took a very different approach. It wasn't looking at increasing the range of treatment services to cover more of the population. It was looking at how we could prevent suicide in the first place. And I think what we need to do is extend that approach that we've had with suicide to look for, to mental health problems in general.
If Australians with mental health issues are being properly treated, though, isn't that an improvement?
Well, I think it is an improvement, but you've got to say, well, what is our aim? We would hope that if you're greatly increasing the range of people being treated in the population, you would hope that the mental health of the population ought to improve as well. I think what's happened is that historically, we had mental health services for people who really had the more severe mental illnesses like schizophrenia. And then what we tended to do was to try and increase the ambit of mental health services. They cover more and more people with milder problems. And I think treatments tend to work best for the people with the more severe problems.
So are you concerned that the increase in funding has simply increased the quantity of services and not the quality of the services being offered?
That definitely is a possibility. I think we need to hold the line on further expansion of services to cover a broader range of people. I think we need to do a better job at people with the more severe mental illnesses who are being neglected, who really do not have good quality lives. And I think we need to increase population health approaches, community health approaches, emphasising prevention.
To what extent can mental health disorders be prevented, not just treated, but stopped from ever beginning?
Well, people often question that, but now there's very good evidence on it that you can prevent mental disorders. So, for example, during childhood, there are a whole lot of things parents can do to reduce their risk of children developing mental health problems. Parents know, for example, about how to reduce their children's risk of skin cancer. And there's similar things they can do. For example, with adolescents, that the later they have their first alcoholic drink, the lower their risk of developing alcohol problems when they're adults. And they often go together with other mental health problems like anxiety problems and depression. We also know that things like conflict in the home, they need to keep that conflict away from the child, not to involve the child in taking sides and witnessing the conflict, because that increases their risk of mental health problems as an adult. So they're the two examples. We could do a lot in schools. For example, we know that children who are bullied at schools have a higher risk of depression when they're adults. Right across the lifespan, there are opportunities for prevention that we're not taking currently.
What proportion of the mental health budget is now spent on prevention? Do you know that?
I can tell you it's absolutely minuscule, absolutely minuscule. And I can tell you, because I'm a researcher, I can tell you that the research budget on prevention is absolutely minuscule. In fact, it's declining. So we're really getting nowhere in this area. A group of people working in the mental health area got so concerned about it, we've formed now the Alliance for the Prevention of Mental Disorders. But I think we need governments really to really switch on to this population health preventive agenda.
So what would you advise governments, health ministers, to change, and how much more would it cost?
I think it'd probably cost a lot less, actually. I would say, okay, hold the line on expanding mental health services to cover a broader range of people with treatment. Invest in mental health first aid skills so that people can support each other. And most of all, invest in prevention right across the lifespan. It's comparatively cheap compared to treatment.
You say it's a matter of political will. Are you seeing any signs of a shift in the current federal government?
No, I'm not. We are getting a review. The current federal government has commissioned review of all services, and they're due to report next month. So I wait with bated breath to see what comes. But at this stage, no, we're not seeing anything.
And Professor Jorm, I'm intrigued in your paper that Australia has the second highest use of antidepressants in the OECD after Iceland. Does that seem curious to you?
No, it doesn't surprise me. We've had a massive increase in antidepressant use, and we are very high on international stakes, and one might expect that that might improve the mental health of the population, and it apparently hasn't.
So is that a possible example of a wasted treatment?
Well, I wouldn't say it's wasted. I think these things do have a role, but I'd say further expansion, and we've just had, it's still ongoing. We get ongoing expansion, say, in antidepressant use in Australia. Further expansion of that is probably not warranted, I would say. We need to look at what strategies we're doing and whether they're working. So what we've tended to do is say, more money is being spent, there are more services, therefore that's a good thing. What we haven't tended to do is look at what are the outcomes, and we need to focus on outcomes, not just on expenditure and increase in services.
Do you think it is likely, though, that Australians are more depressed than people in any other OECD country than Iceland?
I think that's unlikely. I think that's unlikely. I wouldn't say Australia is be one of the worst countries in the world for depression by any means.
That's Professor Anthony Jorm from Melbourne University's School of Population and Global Health, whose paper has just been published in the Australian and New Zealand Journal of Psychiatry.